Welcome to Dialogue Out Loud. I'm your host, Margaret Olson Hemming, one of the co-editors of Dialogue, and we are here today to talk about the summer 2026 issue, which will be coming out very soon. So we wanted to discuss what is in this issue with our editors, our subject editors that are here together. And this issue covers topics as varied as sexual ethics, science, Haiti, agency, grief, priesthood, race, women's authority, and early Mormon history. So I'm hoping to talk with each editor about what themes or questions interested them as they edited and worked with these authors. So we start out with three articles. The three articles seem to tackle questions of authority from very different angles, scripture, science, and institutional growth. We open with Jacob's Temple Sermon as Reinterpretation of Scripture and Rethinking of Sexual Ethics by Spencer P. Greenhall. And this is, it's a fresh look at Jacob 2, which is one of the Book of Mormon's most cited passages on sexuality. But Greenhall argues that we've been reading it backwards. And rather than simply repeating traditional sexual rules, Jacob is shown actively reinterpreting scripture when he believes existing teachings are causing harm. And Greenhall argues harm particularly for women and children. And the result is a provocative argument that the real lesson of Jacob's sermon isn't about defending old sexual ethics, but about rethinking them in the light of what are our values on this topic. The next article in this issue is Why the Latter-day Saint Community Can Trust Science in the Same Way Scientists Do by Stephen L. Peck, who has contributed to Dialogue many times and is a science professor at Brigham Young University. The article starts with this famous showdown over Darwin's theory of evolution, but it quickly moves past the usual science versus religion story that has been sort of overcooked so many times. And instead, Peck gets into what science actually is. And he argues that it's not just a method or a collection of facts, but it's a living human enterprise that is built around values like truth-seeking, transparency, skepticism, and intellectual humility. And it's the kind of piece that changes how you think about science itself, and gives kind of a surprisingly engaging guide for how non-scientists might engage with the scientific endeavor. The third article for this issue is Latter-day Saint Membership Growth in Haiti, 1978 to 2018 by Henry Gorin. Caroline, do you want to tell us about that article?
Sure, yes. This article, it's a sociological article, and it explores how the church in Haiti moved from this explosive early growth to a much slower pattern over time. And the author, Gorin, he shows that while there are these clear waves in terms of like patterns of how membership rises and falls, there actually is no single factor like poverty or a political crisis that fully explains why these shifts are happening. But instead, ultimately, he points to the importance of ethnographic work. We need more ethnographic work in places like Haiti to talk about, you know, things like the importance of missionary presence and local culture and the everyday ways that Haitians are practicing their LDS religion.
That's great. Is there anything that particularly stood out to you of what this adds to global Mormon studies?
I think it's really important to be looking at Latin America and growth patterns there, because it does, you know, it just has such a striking background of like an explosion of growth in the 70s and 80s, and then this rapid leveling off. And so I think by looking specifically at Haiti, we get these, like, and Haiti being the one, like, the poorest country in the hemisphere. I mean, it just has so many interesting factors, total political chaos all the time. I think we can just really get to some interesting factors of what role the church is playing for members there and why it might be attractive. And also where there might be some interesting confluences and some interesting tensions.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Okay, let's move to personal voices. We have two personal voices in this issue. One is Voices as Bells by Hadley Duncan Howard, and the other is Agency is Not the Enemy, and the author's name was withheld for this issue. Charlotte is here to tell us about these articles.
I'm excited to talk about these two pieces. They relate to a lot of these themes, Margaret, that you've already brought up about this issue. So in Voices as Bells by Hadley Duncan Howard, in this essay, we learn about the very near death of the author's 8-year-old from starvation. It's this really powerful story about heavenly communications, including from her daughter before her birth, from God, and other heavenly communications asking her questions to help her know how to help her daughter in that moment, talking about ideas of blessing and like helping her to be able to recover from what was going on. There's this one quote from it that I found it really powerful as well. She's talking about her daughter in particular and who she is. And this is what she says in it, quote, "A spirit of immense strength, a voice clear as a bell and all her own that cannot be silenced." So this shows us where the title of her essay is coming from, is talking about her daughter and her voice and her who she is and the powerful person that she is, and how much that was such a struggle because of what was going on with this near death from starvation in that moment. So it's a really powerful piece to be thinking about these ideas of power, communications, who someone is and being restrained in maybe certain ways and being able to live up to who they are. The other piece that we have, Agency is Not the Enemy. In this piece, the author, who is a mother, a religious educator, and an aspiring historian, looks at agency, and particularly women's agency. They weave the history of women in the United States in particular into their piece, thinking about the history of coverture and the cult of domesticity, and how these historic ideals of motherhood have created a world where women's agency has been treated as a threat. They look at these very specific instances of what that looks like, their own experiences with this, thinking about LDS culture as well, and they come up to the present with that. And again, there's this part at the end that I think really brings together the essay really powerfully. And I'll quote again from this piece. "If a woman exercises her agency in a way that does not conform to expectations, the family, society, and church are at risk. Women kept in a box are safe, and society is secure." And then the author continues, "Maybe restoration isn't just a theological exercise, but it is also a restoration of choice and autonomy to half the population whose agency has been restricted primarily out of fear. Maybe Zion is about equity and balance, not boxes and cultural expectations."
Mm. Wow. It sounds like these two pieces could be read together in really interesting ways. And that agency is a theme in both of them. Would you say that, I mean, agency is such a common idea in Latter-day Saint culture and doctrine. How would you say the two pieces together complicate or deepen an understanding of that idea of, you know, what is agency or what is free will?
I think both of these authors do these really great things about thinking about, especially the gender dynamics with agency. Very often when we think about agency and who has agency or what that agency looks like, and there's a long discourse around this within Mormon studies about agency as well. And so I think it's really interesting to see these two personal voices, one where they're talking about their own experiences about seeing what they can do to help their daughter particularly, but thinking about her powerful, who she is as a person as well, her own daughter, and these kind of dynamics of thinking of generational differences with agency and trying to make those possibilities there. And then I think that's one reason it works so well with this other piece of thinking about these historical moments of what this has looked like and how that impacts our modern culture and thinking, okay, what can we do to move beyond just being constrained? And so I think even how the one piece talks about this idea of how she sees her daughter and her voice and her power. And then I think how the other piece ends of like not being constrained to a box, like actually that doesn't help anybody to have this box that's containing. And I think both of them show this possibility when we're not constrained in particular ways. And I think that's a really powerful message coming from both.
Great. Wow. That sounds fantastic. Thank you, Charlotte. We have 5 poems in this issue, and Teresa is here to tell us about them.
Okay. Despite the summer heat, in this issue, we find respite on a November night in spirals and digressions, in Samuel the Lamanite's courage, and in grief and, ironically, deep snow. By Reed Richards, we have the poem November. He speaks of the dark night of the soul, of silent strangers, of trees shivering, of a dark, locked house. You get a sense of an insufficient world, or maybe it's sufficient. Maybe it's okay that it's dark and you're alone and it's a meditative moment. So it's a very thoughtful poem, introspective. The next poem we have is called The Spiral by Britta Adams. She covers in the poem, shape is metaphor, spiritual digressions, scrupulosity, rabbit holes, salvation, and time tunnels in perpendicular mirrors. So her reference to the temple are pretty clear. I think it's beautifully wrought and very interesting. Pretty interesting. The next poem is Samuel Returns by William Morris. We venture into the soul of Samuel the Lamanite, and it's not just a little trip. We do quite the venture. within this poem, there lies city walls, visions, repentance, and hope. All right. And then to wrap up the poems in this issue, Dixie Partridge, we are grateful to have 2 poems by her, very renowned poet. The first is entitled Grief is Not a Task. The takeaway from this poem is that grief can point us home. So many times we might fear grief or, you know, with a long-term illness or a loved one suffering Alzheimer's or any illness whatsoever. And grief has a way of bringing us home. And to me, that can infer a humbling and, again, introspection. And then the gem of the poems for me in this issue, Living Alone at High Elevation After Loss. Something about Dixie Partridge, she really nails it in this poem. It is stunning. It is meditative. I'd like to just share a brief excerpt. What can be said on winter landscapes, right? So there can be a lot said, and this poem points to that. One of the stanzas she says, how from enough distance, even the violence of avalanche is silent and beautiful. So I don't want to share any more of that. I would like to invite you to get the issue and read it.
Thank you. So if you were talking to someone who said, well, poetry isn't really my thing, like I don't know how to read poetry, what would you tell them to look for in these poems to help them sort of understand it or be excited about them?
That's a great question. So I read a lot. I'm a librarian, and not every book by every author I enjoy. So I may like one book, and then the next book by the same author I don't like. And similar with poetry. And within our issues, we often have a variety of poems. that vary in length and vary in the intent and in the author's experience. And so I would invite our readers and anyone kind of questioning, well, like, how can I find poetry that's going to be accessible to me or something that will relate? I suggest, yeah, taking a look at the poems we have in our issues. And if one doesn't hit, try the next one. I guarantee, and like maybe contact me. I'm happy to have a conversation. But yeah, so one of them's going to hit, if not more than one, because, you know, these are some beautiful works by some very well-respected writers. So keep reading.
Always good advice. All right, thank you. Next, we have our book reviews, and we will begin. Our fiction book review editor is also not here, Andrew, but he is also recording something for us to include in this episode. And then we will end with our nonfiction book review, Nicholas Shrum. And he is going to share what he has chosen to include for the summer issue.
Hello, this is Andrew Hall, the Literature Book Review Editor, and I'm here to tell you about three reviews of books that are mostly by female authors, and all the reviewers are female. The first one is At Last She Said It, Honest Conversations About Faith, Church, and Everything in Between by Susan Hinckley and Cynthia Winward. This is a book by two podcasters and authors who are looking at women in the church who are facing doubt and looking up these faith issues, not in terms of, you know, can they stay with the institution or not, but, you know, what is best, most healthy for them, and what role could faith play in their lives. The reviewer, Lisa Torcaso Downing, says the authors are gifted wordsmiths, but the tone is casual, even chatty, as they strive to mirror their podcast conversational format. They volley essays back and forth, often giving us two perspectives on any given topic. Winward, in particular, offers the readers a stellar treatise on grace, a vital gospel tenet that often seems buried under the weight of dogma. Forgotten, she writes of grace, but delicious. Then we have several reviews of poetry books. The first is a review of three poetry books, all reviewed by another great poet, Alixa Brobry. The first is Charlie Mons Glenn's Brighter and Brighter Until the Perfect Day, which is an epic poem written at length verse, Miltonian style, which tells the story of the plan of salvation with fierce imagination, thoughtful language, and meticulous craft. And unlike Milton, Heavenly Mother and other female characters play key roles in this story. My second book in this review is Marilyn Bushman Carleton's We Wore Dresses. So if Glenn's collection focuses on centering women's choices in explicitly eternal context, Bushman Carleton's collection catalogs a woman's life here on earth, from girlhood through adulthood, with all the messiness, desires, choices, and hardship that entails. Then we have the only book by a male author, Stephen Peck's Experiments in the Fading Light. Now, Stephen is a biologist, and his poetry collection is made up of a series of sections, each constituting an experiment. But in each experiment, he delves into a wide range of themes and styles, including agency, fall, climate change. Alexia, our reviewer, says these collections are all striking in both their differences and similarities. They all employ formalistic elements, like meter, rhyme, metaphor, to great effect. All deal with themes of choice and with the passage of time. All include references to the LDS theology of Heavenly Mother. All are a great choice for someone looking to spend an afternoon of their wild and precious life reading through carefully crafted poetry that opens up new avenues discussion. And the final collection is The Bear's Mount by Laura Stott, reviewed by Heidi Naylor. Heidi says that Laura's collection will break your heart. It's a pilgrimage to loss and beauty, focusing on the story of a mother who has lost her daughter and another daughter who has lost her sister. She says that these poems are filled with sorrow for the lost little girl, but are also showing the dance of life that insists on moving forward and going on. And we see a lot of the family joy that coexists with this help. As he said, Laura said, having these kind of tragedies, the trick to surviving is finding a guide that shows us how to do it. And Laura Stott is that tender and insistent escort. All right. I hope you enjoy these books.
For academic book reviews, we have two that have come out with academic presses. So the first one that I'll just give a brief intro to is Brittany Romanello's review of Jason Palmer's Forever Familias, Race, Gender, and Indigeneity in Peruvian Mormonism that was published in 2024 with the University of Illinois Press. This review is entitled Regrounding Complex Legacies of Culture, Identity, and Faithscapes in Jason Palmer's Forever Familias. And this is a great review. Romanello praises Palmer for taking on some difficult subject matter, including this praise that, quote, the book challenges the comfort of mainstream LDS narratives and forces readers to confront uncomfortable truths about white Mormonism and the U.S. colonial legacy. Romanello didn't find the book easy to read. It's difficult to wade through some of that subject matter, but it's an important contribution to the field. The other academic book review that we have is from Joseph W. Geisner, who reviewed Cheryl L. Bruner's edited collection, Secret Covenants, New Insights on Early Mormon Polygamy, that was published with Signature Books in 2024. Geisner goes through a number of the different articles that are included in that and talks about their contributions to how we understand early Mormon polygamy, and praises it as a must-read for any student of Joseph Smith's polygamy and restoration studies. So that's another one definitely to take a look at.
That sounds great. And I'm really interested in, you know, this Forever Familias with Mormonism in Peru and women's spiritual authority. Does it seem to you that Mormon studies is becoming more expansive in scope? What would you like to, is there anything you'd like to say about the current state of Mormon publishing from the books that you're reviewing here?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that especially with Jason Palmer's book, this, you know, really heavy, I mean, it's similar to Caroline Klein's book in Global Mormon Studies and Women's History, there's a lot of ethnography that has gone into this, a lot of spending time with people outside of white American Mormonism. And so that's just a really helpful way of being able to dig into the various ways that Mormonism is practiced and lived and experienced and embodied. And it seems like Jason Palmer's book is a great example of how to push the envelope on that. And then with Cheryl Bruno's edited collection on early Mormon polygamy will always be a hot topic, and it has been especially so in the last couple of years. Geisner mentions in the review that there are some more controversial takes that readers will encounter, but that those are worth engaging with and sitting with, and the debate and conversation continues.
Wow, that sounds so great, and I just want to add that all of this sort of expansion of, what we're seeing in Mormon publishing is also reflected in the art of this issue, where we have artists from multiple countries. Georgina Bringus is several pieces included in this issue. And I think people will want to see and hold this art in their hands. If you don't have a subscription to Dialogue yet, of course, everything is free online, and you can read it there. But to see this art in color and hold it in your hands is something really special as well. So I hope that you will consider subscribing to Dialogue to see that. We also have something a little different for this issue, which is a review essay about Conclave. This is an article called Conclave, Priesthood Ordination, and God's Spirit in an Evangelizing Church.
Yeah, this was a fantastic, really interesting and engaging review essay from Gordon Shepherd. It's part autobiography, part reflection on his own experience as a young missionary in Mexico in the 1960s. and kind of uses that to foreground his engagement with, with Harris's novel Conclave, which was also made into a movie in 2024, but the book was originally published in 2016. And it's a really interesting reflection on kind of how within the similarities and parallels between Catholicism and Mormonism when it comes to priesthood, and kind of these steps in life that people take when they're on their missions, or whether they consider ordination to priesthood within Catholicism. The way that, if people aren't familiar with the book is about this scenario where there's going to be a new pope and there's an election, and how these various powerful Catholic men kind of vie for authority, or the way that they understand their calling as cardinals within the Catholic Church. And he characterizes the book like this. He says, quote, "It's a novel that humanizes its religious protagonists and the ecclesiastical structures that shape their motives and actions, while optimistically projecting a kind of humanistic faith in the reformative possibilities of transforming even our most conservative institutions," end quote. So it's a really interesting reflection on how he kind of, his relationship with the church and how that has changed over time from the time that he was a missionary, and seeing, you know, how do we engage with an institution that maybe doesn't have the same commitments that we have, or where things kind of start to separate and depart from our own commitments. Just as that happens in Conclave in the novel. I really recommend it. It's an excellent review essay.
Yeah, thank you. I loved the book and the movie, and it definitely resonated with my own experiences in Mormonism. So I'm not surprised that this essay was written, and it's really great. So I'm excited for people to read it. This has been an episode of Dialogue Out Loud, talking about the summer 2026 issue. We are excited for you to see it on the screen and hold it in your hands. I'm Margaret Olson Hemming, and thank you for reading and engaging with Dialogue.
Greetings, my name is Rebecca DeSchweinitz, and I'm thrilled to serve as a board member at the Dialogue Foundation and as one of the hosts of Dialogue Gospel Study. In each episode, which we record live the second and fourth Sunday of every month, we welcome esteemed speakers from a variety of backgrounds to share their insights and perspectives on the Come Follow Me lessons. Our aim is to spark meaningful conversations about the scriptures, to connect them to our personal experiences and to our understandings and explorations of the gospel. To stay in the loop with our upcoming lessons and this opportunity to engage with Mormon thought, culture, and belief, be sure to visit dialoguejournal.com and sign up for our newsletter. By doing so, you'll receive updates and timely links to join our live stream lessons. Additionally, you can catch up on our past guests and episodes by subscribing to Dialogue Journal on YouTube, Facebook, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dialogue Podcast Network.